It's 8:26 and 48 degrees. Time for the Our Community segment, where we open up our arts and events calendars and find out what's happening in our community. I do see there's a race this weekend. It's the Anchorage Running Club. And you can join the 10 Trent Waldron Half Marathon and 10K race Saturday the 26th at Westchester Lagoon. It's a race benefiting Young Anchorage Cancer Society survivors, and the Anchorage Young Cancer Coalition is the sponsor. So take a look at the Anchorage Running Club, anchorageRunningClub.org is the website where you can get more information about that. And of course, Memorial Day weekend is coming up, and Monday the 28th is the Anchorage Municipality of Anchorage Memorial Day celebration and ceremony. Keynote speakers include senior military officer in Alaska, Lieutenant General Ken Wilsbach, and Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz. The event starts at 9:30 at the Delaney Park Strip. Well, a little later on in the week, next week, we'll find out more in just a second from our guest. But there's an event called the Friendship... Well, it's the Flight Into Tomorrow that helped end the Cold War. This is at the Anchorage Museum with a lecture from 6:30 to 7:30. Dave, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So this lecture series, we're marking an important milestone for an anniversary.
That's right. Next month, June, is the 30th anniversary of what's called the Friendship Flight. And this is the Alaska Airlines flight from Nome to Providenia, which was the USSR at the time, the Soviet Union. And the purpose of the flight was to reunite Native people on both sides of the Bering Strait who had been separated by the Cold War for 40 years. So all these family members who used to have regular contact across the Bering Strait all of a sudden could not see each other, and that lasted for 40 years. And then in 1988, the Alaska Airlines jet helped reunite these Native families on the Russian side, and it really launched about a 25-year era of very good relations between Alaska and Russia. So it was certainly a milestone event in improving relations across the strait.
And my impression is that it really helped de-escalate some of the Cold War tensions between Moscow and Washington.
It certainly did. What happened was Gorbachev came to power in the Soviet Union, and he was a different type of Soviet leader. He was interested in interactions with the West. He encouraged business deals with Westerners, and he was open to some of the ideas that a lot of Alaskans had to reestablish ties across the Bering Strait. And there were a number of events that led up to the Friendship Flight in 1988. For example, a woman named Lynn Cox swam between the Diomede Islands in 1987, and that got lots of international press. But the Friendship Flight was the first event with serious business and political support behind it. There were 82 passengers on the flight. Most of them were Alaska Natives, mostly elderly, hoping to see relatives on the other side. And in fact, in a few cases, they did.
And so I guess there's been some sort of continuation, or that's sort of opened up a little bit more, but you still hear that it's somewhat somewhat unusual for folks to be able to go across and see their relatives.
That's true. The Friendship Flight really opened things up, and a couple of years after that, Alaska Airlines established regular flights between Alaska and the Russian Far East. So you could get on a plane in Anchorage and 4 hours later land in Magadan or Khabarovsk or one of the big cities in the Russian Far East. And for about 5 years, Alaska Airlines provided that direct service, so it was very easy to go back and forth, and thousands of people flew back and forth between the Russian Far East and Alaska. But headed towards the year 2000, when Putin came to power, the Russian economy got very chaotic, and then things started to cool down. Now it's very difficult to get to Russia. There's really no direct air service. You can go to Nome and take a charter service over through Bering Air, but they only serve two cities and only on a charter basis, and it's pretty expensive. So unfortunately today there's not a lot of contact, but I think there's a lot of enthusiasm on both sides of the border for renewed contact again.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dave Ramsour, and we're talking about an Alaska Airlines flight the Friendship Flight, the anniversary of the 30th anniversary of the Friendship Flight, a lecture is happening May 31st at the Anchorage Museum, 6:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. The Flight Into Tomorrow That Helped End the Cold War is the title. So when this happened, we were in a very different political climate, and on the same page, it seems like we're seeing a reflection of that in modern times.
I think you're exactly right. Things were actually very tense in the mid-1980s. A lot of people may remember in 1983, a Korean civilian jet airliner took off from a routine flight from Anchorage headed to Seoul, Korea. It mysteriously drifted into Russian airspace and was shot down, and it killed 269 people. And so things were very tense, and the Friendship Flight really broke the ice to try to open relations. And for about 25 years after that, relations were pretty good. But now things are chilled down again. It's quite difficult to do business in Russia. It's expensive to get there. You have to get a visa, which is also very expensive. And the government really discourages much interaction. One of the legacies of this era is visa-free travel for native people of both sides. And so Alaska and Russian natives in the Bering Sea region can travel without the requirement of a visa. So it's a little easier for them, but still it's a bit bureaucratic and kind of expensive.
And of course, that sort of helped reinforce the idea that a tribally authored ID or that's originating from a tribal nation is an actual form of legitimate ID, because it's from its own nation. So I think that was really one of these side effects that people maybe don't talk about quite as much, but just sort of cementing that, well, hey, this is really the real deal.
Yeah.
So this card is legit, man. Right. So when you look at these things and then you're hearing about, you know, say Korea or North Korea and these sort of things, are there parallels?
Parallels between Russia and North Korea?
Kind of like if you think about our relationship in the United States with Russia at the time and our current relationship with North Korea, and saying, you know, is there something similar there that could be changed by something like this?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think a lot of it is just cultural misunderstanding, and that was one of the good things about the Friendship Flight, is that it exposed people to each other's culture. And so once you start talking to people, you become friends and you're less likely to shoot at each other or launch nuclear missiles at each other. So I think that has some application at what's going on in North Korea and certainly in Russia too.
I guess one important distinction I can think of is that we don't think of, you know, North Korea as having sort of our cousins or Ilocs over there, you know, like we some folks in Alaska would consider right there across the straits, basically. Yeah. You'd see cousins. So how long did the actual flight take, and how close are we?
Well, the Bering Strait is only 55 miles apart at the closest point, so basically from the Alaska mainland to the Russian mainland, 55 miles. And then the two Diomede Islands in the middle of the Bering Sea are only 2.5 miles. So you can stand on Little Diomede, the village on the Alaska side, and see Big Diomede not very far away. And there used to be interaction, but the Soviets moved Russian natives who were living on Big Diomede back to the Russian mainland, and so now there's just a military post there that's focused on Alaska. There's a little outpost of border guard soldiers with telescopes, and they look at Alaska, and they have a lot of guns in case something happens. But, you know, I don't think there's much tension in the region anymore.
So we're thinking about that historic flight. Would you say it was an hour long or less? I mean, that sounds...
It was only about 45 minutes. I was a passenger on the flight among the 82 people. I was working for Governor Cooper at the time. I was his press guy, and there were about 20 press reporters, international reporters, on the flight. So my job was sort of herding the reporters. But yeah, it only took about 45 minutes. Took off from Nome, landed in Russia. Most of us, it was the first time ever in Russian soil. I think a lot of people were kind of nervous about it because we saw Russia as the evil empire, as Ronald Reagan called it, and we were nervous about going. But Once we landed on the ground, the Russians had hundreds of school children lined up with American flags, welcome to the Soviet Union. And some of the Alaska Natives got off the flight and immediately encountered people of their same clan or of their same name. And so there was a reunification on the tarmac. There are a number of pictures from the day of Native people on the Russian side being able to speak to Alaskans in their native tongue, which was just an incredible experience after 40 years. So we'll talk about all that on Thursday evening.
That sounds like great fun, and you know, it's always great to reminisce about different times and see, well, hey, what's similar in our time, or what? I remember growing up that the sort of the Russian thought was, or like the idea of Russians, it's like really, it was a heavy thing where you're thinking about that. And it's like, I don't think we have that with folks that are growing up these days to think about that and say, huh, well, what's the matter with Russia?
Well, when I was a kid, I remember we had these air raid sirens in elementary school, and we all used to have to jump under our desks because of a test of a Soviet nuclear missile coming at us. We don't do that much anymore. But still, I think there's a lot of nervousness between Americans and Russians, and I think it's just lack of cultural understanding. And that's one of the great things that Alaska did, is we were on the cutting edge of melting the ice curtain, which is what the way a lot of people characterize it, ending the Cold War and reducing tensions. And so I think Alaskans are owed a lot of gratitude for the efforts they made in making the world a safer place.
And when we look at current events today and see, well, like how has that sort of ethos changed when you look at technology and say like social media and the influence of that sort of technology and how people can talk to each other?
It's amazing these days. Back in the 80s when we were trying to communicate with Russia, it was by telexes. Most people are not familiar with that technology anymore. It's sort of a fax system, almost a telegram type system. And today, Alaskans and Russians are Facebook friends. I mean, I'm Facebook friends with a number of people, so I communicate on a regular basis with people on the Russian side, either in Russian or in English. So social media has certainly brought the world a lot closer.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. I'd like to thank our guest, Dave Rumsdorf, for coming on and talking about our upcoming lecture at the Anchorage Museum. It's The Flight Into Tomorrow That Helped End the Cold War. That's Thursday, May 31st from 6:30 to 7:30. Dave, anything else you'd like to add?
I would just add that I've assembled four other passengers from the flight of various capacities. Gunnar Knapp, who's an academic at UAA or recently retired. And there are several other people. There's a guy from Nome who's coming down, a woman from Seattle who's coming up. And so various people who are involved in various aspects of the flight. And so they'll be there as well to talk about how it came together, what it meant, and what it might mean for future U.S.-Russia relations.
Any of the elders that saw their relatives after so long of a time?
Still around? Unfortunately, no. Most of the elders who were on the flight were in their 70s and 80s at the time in 1988, so they've passed. There are a few people, few of the younger folks. There's a particularly interesting woman who lives in Sitka now named Darlene Orr, and she was one of the youngest natives on the flight. She actually spoke English, Siberian Yupik, and Russian, and she was the only American on the flight who could speak those languages. So when we landed in Providenia, she was very helpful because she could speak Siberian Yupik and Russian to the Russians on the other side. But she couldn't make it up for the lecture.
That's fantastic that she was able to provide that service.
Yeah, she's an incredible woman.
Well, thank you so much for coming by, and we'll be sure to check it out.
Okay, thanks so much.